For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ladies Talking Leafs, I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
And just like Austin Matthews and William Nylander hitting milestones this season, we are hitting our own milestone with this being our 100th episode. Woohoo! And we have a great, fantastic show coming up. And it's a great time of year for hockey fans with the NHL playoffs starting this weekend coming on April 20th.
Yes. And another awesome thing is that we're going to be going weekly during the playoffs, and we are listening to you because a lot of you asked for that last year. So we'll be publishing episodes on a weekly basis and within a day of recording so that we can be right on top of everything for you guys. Anyways, you will be also seeing more new content from us as well that we are calling LTL Quick Hits, which will be exactly that, a short episode with our takes on what is going on with the team at that time. So look for us on the Believe Network, and please hit that follow button on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to us, and you won't miss any of our episodes. If you watch us on YouTube, make sure you hit the subscribe button, and you'll also see our video content for from playoff games that we attend.
All right. So a bit of business here, just to let you know, Bet Online is your number one source for all your spring and summer sports this season, from the NHL and NBA playoff stats, MLB and golf. All the latest stats, news and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props and odds on just about every sport out there.
Head to the website betonline.ag today, or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. Please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know needs support or advice, reach out to Connex Ontario or an organization near you. Place your limits and stay within it. All right, so let's get into our 100th episode now, and we are excited to have two guest interviews for our 100th show. First, we welcome journalist and author Damian Cox to the show to talk Leafs and the upcoming playoffs. And then we have former Leaf and current pro scout for the NHL's LA Kings, Mark Osborne, joining us to give us his thoughts on the Leafs. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
So we're getting closer to puck drop on the 2024 NHL playoffs, and we're waiting to find out who the Leafs are going to play. To talk about this and thoughts on the Leafs going into the playoffs, we welcome to the show Toronto Star columnist and broadcaster Damian Cox.
So Damian is also author of several books on the Leafs and the NHL, including his latest called Revival, The Chaotic, Colorful Journey of the 1977-78 Toronto Maple Leafs, which he has co-authored with Bård Stellick. Thanks for coming on the show with us again, Damian.
Well, it's nice to talk to you guys again. And I generally refer to him as the Bård Stellick.
Just the Bård Stellick. Okay.
If there's any, you know, confusion with all the other Bård Stellicks out there. But it's nice to see you guys again. You've made it through another season, and now you're ready for the heartbreak or euphoria of the playoffs.
All right. Absolutely.
Yes. No heartbreak. So, well, let's get into it. Starting off with the amazing season that superstar Austin Matthews is having. Recently, you wrote an article on Matthews where you wrote that Matthews is the most prolific offensive player in history of the franchise. And the last time we saw something like this over several seasons, the Leafs were a defensive team with Pat Burns, under Pat Burns. So do you think Do you think the fans are appreciating what we're seeing with Auston Matthews, or is there still, there's always this talk about, oh yeah, but what does he do in the playoffs kind of thing, right? But yeah, we just want to get your thoughts on that.
You know, it's a great question, and it has to do with, you know, when Doug Gilmour had his amazing season back in the 92-93 season, or when Darryl Sittler had his great season, his 10-point night and all that stuff back, I guess that would have been the 76-77 season. Or anyway, you know, those kinds of questions didn't surround those guys at that time. And Sittler hadn't really done a whole lot in the playoffs, and Gilmour had, but not in Toronto. So I guess what this is a function of the fact that, you know, people aren't appreciative enough of the fact that this is now a team that's made the playoffs 8 years in a row. I feel like saying, when I hear that, I feel like saying, do you guys realize what happened before this, like all those years before this? And I feel like they're not as appreciative of this superstar player that is suddenly in their midst, and some people, they'd like him to be more like Wendell Clark. I see the jersey behind you there, more like Wendell Clark, could drop his gloves, or, you know, or as you say, have had a history of playoff success. And, you know, I sort of get that, and I sort of don't, because let's face it, we watch these guys every year from October to April, and this is a pretty entertaining team with a lot of outstanding players. And then we watch them for at the very end, and yeah, I understand why people would love them to be successful. I'd like to see them tell a different story, but I don't think a great player who does great things in the regular season is not a great player because his team does not do well in the playoffs. If you think that way, then we better all go down and take Marcel Dion out of the Hockey Hall of Fame and say, no, he wasn't any good. You know, I mean, it's a team game with a focus on individual stars. And I just don't get the feeling. I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think there's enough appreciation out there for Auston Matthews?
No, I don't, because I remember back, obviously, with Doug Gilmour too, but that was the whole team, I guess, in some ways. But when Gilmour got his assists and like his assist record and the points record, but going back to Rick Vive in the 80s with the 50 goal seasons, everything was focused on Rick. I mean, the teams weren't doing well, obviously, during the regular season too much then. And it was like a totally different time, but just so much focus on that, on him getting 50 goals and celebrating him. The fans were just in love with Rick Vive all the time. And when he was scoring those 50 goal seasons. But so I kind of compare it to that. And I just think, I just hear too much of this, it's all about playoffs kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We know it is all about the playoffs. It's all about getting the Stanley Cup. But yeah.
I have a question, actually, since you are a media man. How much of an effect do you think the different media landscape has on that? Because like, I remember, you know, especially if you're looking at that Dougie Wendell 93 run, like the newspapers, like it was front page all the time. And now that it's, and like we had like our cubicles at work were like covered with, you know, clip outs from the paper and stuff like that, you know, like, and so the fact that it's all online, a lot of the media comes directly from the source, you know, from the team. Do you think that has an effect on the way it's kind of, you know, hyped or consumed or?
Well, I mean, the media world compared to 92 is so different.
Totally.
I mean, it's not even the same ball game at all. I think you're right. Then you had columnists in town. This was before I became a columnist back in 92, you know, for all four newspapers that, you know, could change opinion in the city by whatever they wrote in the paper. That's no longer the case. It's changed dramatically in that way. There's a diffusion of interest. There's more teams, and the lack of success of the Leafs since then has allowed people, I think, to become fans of other teams. Heck, you'll find Vegas Golden Knights fans at Leaf games now. So there's been kind of a diffusion of the interest in general. And I think the other thing that's true is Austin Matthews is an American. He's not a Canadian like good old Dougie Gilmore, or good old Wendell Clark, or good old Daryl Sutter. And even the fact that, I mean, the other night he passed Dave Keon for the most goals in team history. Well, you know, Dave Keon played at a time basically when the league was all Canadians. You know, there were no Europeans, very few Americans, and very few teams. Now we live in a world in which there are players from all over the world, lots of Americans, lots of Canadians still, obviously. And, you know, Austin Matthews has to swim in that sort of very different fish tank than guys like Keon did, or even guys like Daryl Sittler is. So I think comparing, it's like comparing eras in hockey, you know, comparing Maurice Richard with Connor McDavid. You can't really. You really can't. It's so different. And comparing media environments from now versus 92, 93, hey, you guys weren't around. So how good could it have been back then? Right? This podcast wasn't around.
Just so true. So true.
You know, to keep people informed and break news. So how good could it have been back then?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let's move on to the playoff picture here then. The big question we have about the playoffs right now is the Leafs defense. So Brad Treliving commented before and during the season that the blue line is an area that he wanted to strengthen. Do you think that he has done enough on the D to take the Leafs on a long playoff run? Okay. Next question. Would you like to elaborate?
But you know what? I don't think that they did. But what was there to do? You know, like, who could you get? I don't think Alex Pietrangelo was available, or Cale Makar, or any of those guys. Like, who are you going to get that was going to make? This bed was made last summer. The other thing was, when you go back to the Leafs losing in the playoffs last year to Florida, why did they lose? Couldn't score.
Yeah, they couldn't score. Yeah.
Couldn't score. And we see this every year, and you'll hear the same nonsense if things don't go well again. They're not tough enough. You know, their defense isn't good enough. And I can almost guarantee you, if they aren't able to beat Florida, it'll be because they couldn't score. Or, you know, and maybe they don't get significant or good enough goaltending. And they kind of go hand in hand, right? If your goaltending's, you better score some goals. So while I think he did what he could with the defense. You know, like I said, who went out and got a player that really changed their defense? Maybe you could argue with Noah Hanifin going to Vegas, you know, maybe, you know, depending. So I think it's going to come down to, you know, whether they've got enough offense. And I really think in a lot of ways, another attacker would have, you know, another goal scorer would have made a lot more sense. But all year, this has been a team that scored lots of goals, and now it's up to the big three or the big four, and we'll see if they can come through and score some more.
So you think really it's probably the goaltending then that on the defensive side that might be the bigger question, yeah? Yeah.
It's always the goaltending, right? I mean, Samsonov outplays Vasilevsky in the first round last year, and the Leafs win. But Samsonov gets hurt, Sergei Bobrovsky plays like Turk Rota, and Florida wins in five. Mm-hmm. And then by the time they get to the final, Bobrovsky is playing like, you know, Turk Broda's chubby brother Alf and can't stop anything anymore. And all of a sudden, Florida doesn't win. I mean, it's really not complicated, but figuring out who's going to be the goalie, who's going to play well enough to get through. I think you're going to see both Joseph Woll and Samsonov in the postseason. Who knows? At this point, it may see Matt Murray as well.
I know. That was interesting.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on then to Sheldon Keefe. Actually, we can say that most people have been saying that he was out-coached a few times the last few playoffs with John Cooper and Paul Maurice both making the right adjustments in the past to beat the Leafs in the playoffs. And Keefe's been a little bit different with his approach this season with the team, whether or not that's because he has a new general manager and it's not his buddy there, Kyle Dubas, that's with him. But do you think this will make a difference in the playoffs, like the way he's kind of changing his approach with like the roster and how like Mitch Marner isn't tied to Austin Matthews. Let's just say now, like, if he decides to keep Domi with Bertuzzi and Austin Matthews as a line, do you think like stuff like that will make a difference?
It better make a difference, right? Yeah. I mean, it better make a difference. Now, yeah. we'll put all our cards on the table. I thought they should have replaced him last spring, and I thought they should have replaced him partway through this season. The one thing you'll never hear is very rarely is to me anyways, almost never hear, boy, those Leafs, they're a well-coached team. Now, to be fair to Keith, he's been gathering experience and he can only deal with the players he's got in front of him. And while I liked last year's Leaf team better than this year's Leaf team, I kind of like this group to play Florida better than last year's group, because we know the referees are going to call their usual garbage games in the playoffs, and they're going to let them know. I mean, who can remember Steve Stamkos running around cross-checking everybody and then mugging Austin Matthews and no power plays? I mean, and the stuff that Matthew Tkachuk got away and Sam Bennett got away with in the playoffs. So I think this group, assuming it's going to be Florida, this group is, I think, might be better set up to take on Florida. So to me, that means if Keith can't get it done with this group, I'm not sure what the argument is for keeping him. I really don't know what it would be, other than continuity. I can't imagine what the discussion would be saying, oh, this is the right guy. Now, that would then lead you to, okay, if it's not going to be him, then who's it going to be? And that's another argument.
Yeah. But that's it.
I think, he's done a good job this year. I think they did a great job with Samsonov in his midseason crisis. I think they've done a good job, navigating lots of different little problems, integrating some other guys into the lineup who have been, pretty useful. Max Domi, I think, is a guy who has taken an entire season, really, to figure out where he fits. So I think you give the coach credit for that. But at the end of the day, it's a win-lose game, and the coach got to win.
Yeah. And you think, I guess, regardless of the fact that his new contract takes effect next year, I guess, because Treliving extended him for it's a 2-year contract, I think. So I guess MLSE has deep pockets. So if it doesn't work out, they'll probably, you think it's, from your opinion, you'd say to, as long as they don't get past the first, or if they don't get past the first round, definitely. But do they have to go a certain number of rounds, in your opinion?
I think we always have to be careful saying what has to happen after a season.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. One, the Toronto Maple Leafs are part of this gigantic sports corporation, and they make $1 zillion. And what we think is success for them may be very different to what they think is success. Selling all the tickets, having another 100-point season, marketing all their players, doing all those things, that's a lot. Like, that's a business they're running. We look at it often as fans. They look at it as business. And also, they have to exist within the National Hockey League. So last year, when people are saying, okay, they've got to tear up that core, and I say, okay, let's say you're going to trade Mitch Marner. Who are you going to get? Who are you going to get that's going to make your team better? This is not 1999, where you can spend as much money as you want and bring in 3 more guys and keep the ones you got. So you have to say these things in a real world. So, I mean, I would make a change, but I would have made a change before now. What MLSE will do, I don't think, his contract will be the decider. But on the other hand, look, we saw teams like Nashville. David Poile kept Barry Trotz on for years and years and years, even when Nashville didn't have playoff success. There is always an argument to be made for stability and continuity. And I think those are themes that should resonate with Leaf fans, because for so long there was no stability and there was no continuity. So if that ends up being their decision, look, if you're Brad Treliving and you lose in the first round and you say, I'm keeping Sheldon Keefe, what's the downside? Like, what, are they going to fire you? No. Are the fans not going to show up? Oh, they're going to show up. Is a TV contract going to shrink? Are the price, you know, the ticket price is going to go down? There's no negative other than you'll get a bunch of people going, oh, I can't believe that. Well, there's always a bunch of people saying they can't believe something or other with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's definitely true. And now we're actually moving away from the ice a little bit. And you sort of touched on it a little bit because MLSE is this huge behemoth corporation, and they just hired a new CEO, Keith Pelly, who you may have crossed paths with in the past. Can you give your thoughts on what kind of impact you think he may have on the organization and then also on the Leafs?
Yeah, I'm probably a little biased because Keith's a friend of mine. He's just up the road over there. There's a bar just over here, which is where he signed me away from TSN and I joined Sportsnet. So we have
so you're the right guy to talk to about him then. That's real inside info.
We go back a long, long way. Mm. And I've known Keith and I've worked with Keith. And I've been amazed by Keith as he's charted this pretty extraordinary path through sports, international sports, and now he's back here. Now all that said, I imagine he's going to come in here and rip everything up, fire Brendan Shanahan, you know, change the color of the uniforms to yellow, or, you know, I just don't think he's done that. You go back in his history when he was with the Toronto Argonauts, he got on the streets. He literally went house to house selling tickets. That was a very different kind of thing. When he was at Sportsnet and TSN, he did, came up with a lot of different ideas, some of which worked, some of which didn't work. He might put down hiring me was one of the ones that didn't work, but I'll leave that to him to discuss. when he went to the European Golf Tour, spent a lot of time really trying to develop new narratives, try to develop stars, and then he got caught up in the whirlwind of this whole PGA LIV fight. So, now he comes to this situation, gigantically successful company, basketball team. And let's forget, it's not just the Leafs he's coming to be president of. Soccer team. And he may come in and say, the Leafs are the least of my problems. I've got other stuff I want to work on. But I think where he will get involved for sure is in, what is it, 2 years now left on this current deal, Rogers with the NHL. And what the new – he was the guy who flew down to New York and negotiated that deal with Gary Bettman. And I really wonder at some point if the Leafs are going to say, why do we want to be tied to some deal like this? Why can't we have more autonomy? For example, and it's not an exact comparison, in U.S. college football, the University of Notre Dame has their own television package. Entirely unique. Maybe that's what Keith Pelly will be demanding. So I would suspect short-term Leaf fans should anticipate that his impact is going to be on the business side of what the Leafs are doing, and probably particularly on the television side, because there's going to be a lot happening on that over the next couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. So, Chris, anything else?
That was a long answer, right?
Yeah, I know, but really thorough and exact what we're looking for. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
Anyway,
we had no idea that.
No, we had no idea.
He was living just down the road from you.
So. Yeah, he was. I don't know where he's living now. I saw him about a year and a half ago. I was went over to Europe, England, playing golf with some buddies. And then I went down and played with him at his course at Wentworth, which is like, whoa. I didn't even think they let people like me into places like that. And we played there. And at that point, he was really on top of the world. And now to come back to Toronto with a job like this, I think he probably feels like he's on top of the world again. It's exciting for him.
Yeah. Well, we're exciting to see because I know that he's a very creative guy. Yeah. He thinks outside the box. And I kind of feel like the Leafs are, you know, an organization so entrenched in tradition. It's really easy for such a big company to be in a pretty small box, you know, not, you know, want to venture too far outside of what traditionally has been laid out. So I'm kind of excited to see what he will do in the future. So Damian, thanks so much for being on with us and coming on with us as a guest again. And we promise we will not wait so long to invite you on again.
Who are the other 98 people?
we haven't had that many guests, actually, but
we're working on it.
Hey, yeah, we're working
doing,
on
you guys,
it.
You guys are doing super. And I tell you, of all the media out there and stuff, I always get the sense you guys, at least you have the pulse of the people. There's a lot of stuff going on that has changed the media universe in the past number of years. And I think you guys are making a good contribution. So keep going.
Thank you. Hey, thank you so much. We appreciate that feedback. Yeah. And yes, we do try to keep our pulse on Leafs Nation. So everyone, you can check out Damian's articles in the Toronto Star and also visit his website, damospin.ca, where you can find out more about his books that he has authored with, of course, also the Gord Stellick as well. The Gord Stellick. So you can find the link to all of that in our show notes. Thanks again, Damian.
Thanks,
we will
Damian.
Talk to you again soon.
Thank you.
So once again, we want to thank Damian.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for coming on the show. He always has interesting and sometimes a little bit controversial takes on the Leafs, but it's all fun and good. And I did sense actually a bit of positivity this time from his comments. So that's a good thing. Somehow there was, I know he wasn't too big on the defense, but, but somehow I got a positive thing to say that things might go well this year.
Or Sheldon Keefe either, for that matter.
Yes.
But anyway, Damian is a wealth of knowledge. He knows his Leafs. He knows the Leafs history. You know, being a journalist in this market for so long, you know, he has just such a broad scope and perspective on the Leafs and the business of MLSE in the NHL. So now we're going to go and move on to our next guest, Leafs alumnus Mark Osborne. We get his thoughts on the Leafs and his perspectives as a former player.
So it's our 100th episode of the podcast, and we are honored to have with us former Leaf and current pro scout for the LA Kings, Mark Osborne.
So we know Mark from his playing days as a Leaf, of course, and he was with the Leafs for 8 seasons in 2 separate stints from the 1986-87 season to 90-91, and then returned to the Leafs for 3 seasons from 91-92 to 93-94. He played over 900 NHL games, and many fans also know him from his time as an analyst on Leafs TV, and of course, doing the post-game show on The Fan with Gord Stellick. So welcome to the show, Mark. We are so honored to have you on.
Well, you know what? It's great to be with you girls. And when I got that email and I go, two girls that are into the Leafs having their own little show, I said, no problem. I'm in, because I'm one that has two girls and I'm in a house full of women. So this is great. This is great for me.
Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. All right. So let's start off, first of all, by getting your thoughts on Austin Matthews and the season he's having with 69 goals now, one away. So you were Gary Lehman's line mate when he had his 50-goal season and with the Leafs, and you were also played with Doug Gilmour when he was achieving the Leafs' single-season franchise records for points and assists. So the question we have, I guess a lot of fans say it's all about the playoffs, but which is understandable. But as a teammate, can you tell us how it feels as a player, I guess, and the team as a whole to be part of like regular season franchise records like that?
Yeah, it obviously is still a special thing. And you mentioned, you know, Chris, that the playoffs are the ultimate. I mean, that's where you're really judged by, you know, your career achievements in some regards. But, you know, there's no question what Austin is doing right now is fantastic. It's exciting. I remember scouting Austin when he was just getting into the league, because I've been with the Kings now for 9 years. So you were able to recognize what everybody was talking about, this guy that can score big, strong, and powerful. And I'm not going to take credit for this, but I did write in some of my earlier reports that he will be the Rocket Richard winner one day. And but nobody, I think, would have imagined in the post lockout era, or the new lock, you know, the new era that we're in with the cap, that somebody could accomplish what I think the last person would have done. It would have been, I don't even know who would have done 70 goals the last time. I know we talked about Stamkos doing 60, but, you know, I was in the building last night when the Leafs lost to Detroit and Austin scored 69. And everybody was just so hoping that they would be part of history, right? Yeah. Being in that building, it did not happen. But as I told you off air before, I'm heading down to Florida tomorrow to see the final two games of Tampa Bay, of which the Leafs play on Wednesday. And, you know, Austin plays in Florida Tuesday and then in Tampa Wednesday. So hopefully records or history is achieved with him scoring in one of those two games. It'll be a treat to maybe be a part of that watching it, because it's something special, no doubt.
Yeah. All right.
But, you know, further to that, when you mentioned Gary Lehman and Doug Gilmore, and, you know, prior to even Austin breaking Ricky Vibes' record of 54 when he did that. So yeah. You think about the Leafs' history and the long-standing history of over 100-plus years, and there were only 350 goal scorers, and that would have been Vibe, Andrewchuk, and Lehman, and I would have played with all three of those guys.
Right.
So you're kind of looking at that and you're going, man, don't you think the Leafs should have had more 50-goal guys only playing in the generation that I had played in for that short period of time? But nonetheless, it's an awesome achievement. And playing with guys that break records, it doesn't diminish the fact that they – you know, accomplish these things, because, you know, when Gary scored his 50th goal and having assisted on it, I remind him that, yeah, I got 50 assists and you had scored 51 goals, but I think I assisted on 50 of your 51. So you would have never have gotten 50 without me.
Of course. So what does it kind of feel like in the room though, when like a guy does that, like immediately after, like, what's that kind of like?
Yeah, well, it, obviously, the guys are talking about it all the time. And, you know, you can only imagine inside the dressing room. I mean, guys are kibitzing in practice, and you realize that it's something that is going to happen. And so there's, I'm sure, lighthearted conversation. The guys understand on the bench and on the ice, like they even watch it on the power play, that they're looking to get it to Austin. Like, I don't think they're changing things up because he's such a big part of their power play anyways, but, you know, that's obviously one of the situations in a game where that could possibly become a reality, because it's not just the power play, but Austin's going to get good looks on the power play. I mean, he scored number 69 on the power play, albeit from a different side of the ice, but, you know, I think he had 10 shots on net last night. He rang a crossbar. So, you know, when you play with guys like that, I think it almost becomes routine in some ways, because you just know that it's going to happen. And, I don't necessarily think you take it for granted, but, you know, you do understand the magnitude of what it's like to play with guys that have such special abilities and skill. And then, you know, going back to when Dougie Gilmore broke Daryl Sittler's record that year, when he won the Selke Trophy as well, you know, arguably in playing in that generation with Gretzky and Lemieux and Yzerman, and, you know, those were iconic players. But Dougie, those 2 years, I would say, was the best player in the NHL, because he played a 200-foot game. And not only did he play at both ends of the ice, kill penalties, power play, but he broke that record of Daryl Sittler. That was a special season.
You're not going to get any argument from me in particular there. Okay, so let's move on to that 93 Leafs team that you were part of. And you were part of a formidable checking line with Bill Berg and Peter Zezel. Do you think that having a true shutdown line is kind of a lost art in today's NHL? Or, you know, how have you seen it sort of evolved in today's game?
Yeah, you know what? That is a great question, because I know that as teams, and every team does it differently, right? Like every team builds their team and constructs them, and we've gone into a style of play that is based on speed and skill. Like that is just the nature of the way the game is played today. The players in my generation were bigger. We were hooking. We were holding. I mean, now you got to be able to skate and you have to have skill. And the smaller player is now able to play in today's game. Whereas in, you know, except for guys like Dougie Gilmore, I mean, you had to fight through the hooking and the holding and the big player. I mean, sometimes when you watch those old highlights, you can't believe what we got away with, right? Like you, I mean, sometimes you could watch, you know, the old footage of that series that we had, say with LA, or you watch the Red Wings series, and it was exciting hockey and it was back and forth. And it almost seemed as though, even though we were the checking line, it seems like guys couldn't check their coats at the time, you know, like the way the progression of the game and defensive schemes have been implemented. And yet, we had that formidable third line checking assignment that Pat Burns was not afraid to put us out against, you know, the other team's top lines, and then allow Dougie's line or, you know, if it was John Cullen at the time or whatever the second line would have been, you know, because Burnsy would always change up the wingers with Dougie. You know, sometimes it'd be Borishevsky and Clark. Sometimes it'd be Anderchuk. Glenn Anderson would get a turn there. So we knew who the top two lines were, but we also felt very much a big part of our reasonable success as a checking line. And so you look at teams, and I know people often, you know, they'll stop you and say, oh man, we haven't had a checking line since your line. And it's almost in some ways a shame or a crime that we're sitting here, what, 31 years later, 30 years later, still talking about the relative success that we had going to the Stanley Cup semifinals, close to getting to the finals, being robbed by Carey Fraser. And I think there was a conspiracy back then. You know, if you believe in conspiracy theories, I think it was out for us back then. But, you know, nonetheless, I do still see some teams that do have a third line checking role mentality. I mean, if you remember when Tampa Bay won their first cup, a couple of, not the one in with Andrechuk back in 2004, but in recent years, I mean, you had Yanni Gourde with Coleman and Barkley Goodrow. I mean, that was, they were a huge part of that winning that Stanley Cup. I mean, they were strong, you know, they were heavy, even though Gourde was on the slight side, but he competed hard. Goodrow checked well. Coleman was a heavy body. And so, yeah, they were a checking line that produced as well. So, you know, you look at, you know, maybe another team that has a perfect C3. Like we like to kind of categorize them by C1, C2, C3, C4 on teams. And traditionally your C3 would be and form a checking role. And yet C3s today are often called upon to also score. So, you know, you can only put so many guys out on power plays. And so your bottom six get traditionally, they're tagged as your role guys. And yeah, if you can build a checking line that you can free up one of your other two top scoring lines, then that only enhances and helps your team. And I even think back, you know, to the Leafs with when David Camp is on your C3, like you put Yarncroft over there. And I don't know who else they would put on their on the left wing, but you know, that could be a pretty good checking line for you, where I know Sheldon Keefe is not afraid to play a guy like David Kampf against any other team's top centers. He's not going to produce. Like that's one thing we know David is not going to do. Like even a couple of years ago, he did score a couple of goals in the playoffs. If you remember, like those were important goals for him, but that's not really his role. And it's really hard to find, you know, two-way guys that can contribute, you know, offensively on your third line, as well as defend well, kill penalties. I think we've gotten away from that traditional third line that, you know, was the generation that I had been a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And especially too, like Peter Zezel also with the faceoff specialist, there are some, because he would, we always, as fans, we were sitting up in the crowd there at Maple Leaf Gardens. We always wanted, we knew Peter Zezel was going to take that important, all the important draws like that. Right.
So, yeah. And also what you have to remember, like Peter's role, and it's kind of funny how our line evolved that year with Pat, is that, you know, Peter came from the Flyers, if you remember, and he was on a scoring line. Like, he scored over 30 goals with, he played with Propp and Kerr, you know, Timmy Kerr and Brian Propp. Like, so it was not like he was a slouch when it came to contributing offensively, but, you know, Burns, he looked at our lineup and said to us, like, could you guys play a certain role? And of course, you mentioned the fact that Zez was very good at taking faceoffs. Well, I remember Burnsy coming up to me, and I had never played right wing. And I know Bergie played left wing, and he asked me, have you played right wing before? And what do you think I told him? I go, of course I've played right wing before. I had never played right wing my whole career, but I had played with Steve Larmer in junior, and Steve was a left-handed shot that played the right side. So, you know, playing your whole life as a kid and playing, you know, a good part of your pro career on the left side, playing left wing. I mean, it was an early adjustment, but like, it doesn't change your role. Like, if you understand the game, you can check. It is a slight adjustment playing on your opposite side, but nothing really does change. Some guys can't make the adjustment. And I also think that there are defensemen. I think it's even harder for defensemen when you ask a left-handed shot to go play the right side. That's not a natural thing for them to do. TJ Brody can do it with the Maple Leafs, and now you're seeing Brian McCabe play the right side. And so some guys make the adjustment they can do, and other guys can't. But, you know, nonetheless, in our case, we fooled Pat, and he used us.
All right. So we're going to move on, and we're going to talk about, I guess, the spotlight of Toronto and how apparently it's so hard for players to deal with the media and just being a Toronto Maple Leaf and being a former Leaf player and also having the experience on the media side. We wanted to get your thoughts on this, on like, do you think the Toronto spotlight is so much different than any other Canadian market, like for players to, that they make such a big deal of this?
Well, yeah, it certainly is. I mean, both Montreal and Toronto, I think, stand apart from the rest of the NHL. I mean, the spotlight, I think Vancouver is tough on their players. They could be very, very critical. In some ways, I'm surprised, you know, to that degree. But, you know, the emphasis of being a Canadian hockey player, or, you know, being a player in a Canadian market is really special. It really is. And when you talk about a rich tradition of being a Maple Leaf, it is not for everyone. You know, because like, you can hide in Tampa Bay, you can hide in Los Angeles. When I played with the Rangers, I mean, you could go to the rink and nobody knows you, right? Like, you could go out to a restaurant, nobody knows you.
Even
you
in can't New York. Go.
In yeah, York, even in really? New York. Well, come on. You know, there's millions of people in New York. Yeah, people do recognize you, but there are so many other, there's tourists, there's, you know, there's lots of people that wouldn't have any idea who you are, but you could be a fourth line player in the Maple Leafs and people will know who you are in this city. It just goes with the territory. Now things have changed with social media, right? Like the phones, guys are afraid to go to the bars because of pictures and, you know, who knows? There's all sorts of those types of things, but there's added pressure in this market. And I think there's been more added pressure because of the Leafs' inability these last 20 years now, right? Like, we're going to, you know, 2005 when the cap was introduced, like the Leafs have gotten out of the first round once, right? And that was last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, when you talk about the fact that the Leafs have had, like, let's face it, they have an entertaining team. Like, fans should be proud of the Maple Leafs and the product that they get to go and watch. But I hear the narrative on the other side of things is that as soon as things you know, they lose a game or two or whatever, or they look at this team and it's like, they're out. They're going to be out early again. They're going to be out early again, right?
I just heard that last night on Twitter.
No, I think that for the player, like, you cannot, I don't think you could do the best that you can not to pay attention to it, but these guys are on their phones. They read the noise and stuff. And I know the team does its best to tell the players, like, do yourself a favor and don't go on social media, because that can really truly affect you mentally and your performance. Because we didn't have that when we played, right? But I remember, like, and this was before the Pat Burns days, but when young players like Vincent Damfus and Daniel Marois were playing, mm-hmm. and they would come in the dressing room, I'd see them reading the Toronto Sun in the morning, and they were like captured by everything that was said about them, positively and negatively. And you could see that these guys, it's not good for them. It's not mm-hmm. good to listen to all that narrative. But as much as the media is for the Maple Leafs here, I think the natural part of it, and having been on the other side, as you guys have mentioned already, in doing Leaf TV or doing stuff on The Score with Gordy Stellick, I think there's always a natural ability, I think, to criticize or look at the faults as equal, right? And when things don't go well, I mean, it's easy to pile on, right? Like, I think there are some in the media that enjoy the negativity rather than the positivity. And I think that that's unique in certain areas. I see it happen in Montreal, La Presse. I mean, that's the French version, but they could be so, so hard on their players. And you open up that La Presse, like, how many pages in today, like, how many people read the newspaper today? And there's like 8 pages of Montreal Canadian stuff there, right? So these are tough places to play, and you've got to be a special person to embrace it. But I love playing here, and Dougie loved it. Wendell loved it. I mean, all of these guys that are iconic Leafs, they ate it up because it was such a great place to play.
Yeah.
Well, we think it's a great place.
Yeah. We think so too. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, and now for the guys in a specific, I would specifically talk about Mitch Marner, right? And, you know, William Nylander, I think, made some strides last year in producing in the playoffs, but the focus really is on a guy like Mitch. You know, like, he's one of their top players. And until he can figure it out in postseason, how to get past the verbal abuse of Brad Marchand or the heaviness, and how the game does change, because it looks like they'll get Florida, and Florida, I think, surprised the Leafs last year, but no team wins without its best players producing. You go back in the history of Stanley Cups, like, you need your foot soldiers in that. It's a team game, but your best players have to be their best players in order for you to succeed. And that certainly lies on the shoulders of their top guys. Mm-hmm. And that's Mitch, and that's Austin, and that's Willie, and that's the Fab Five, you know, for what we've been talking about for these last many years.
Yeah, I can't say it better than that. That's for sure. Yeah. We've been saying that for a few years, like you said. Yeah.
Anyways, let's switch gears, and why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing as a pro scout with LA right now?
Yeah, so I've been on the pro scouting staff now with the Kings for 9 years. And, you know, if you would have asked me, and this almost comes back full circle, because, you know, I look back on 93 and us losing to Rob Blake and Luc Robitaille and, you know, Nelson Emerson and these guys, and they were on that team. And now I'm working with them, right? Like, and I did not play for the LA Kings. So, you know, getting that opportunity when I got approached in 2015 after they won 2 Stanley Cups, I mean, I wasn't campaigning for a job in scouting. I just got approached. I was, you know, happy to do the stuff with Gordy, and, you know, life was good here. So, but it really got my juices flowing, because, you know, I started thinking about it. I went to LA. They told me what the job entailed. And so I got really intrigued by it. And, you know, they offered me a 2-year contract, and I figured, well, if I'm not good at it, or it doesn't work out, or or whatever, then at least I know I would have tried, you know, like, because mm-hmm. being part of a team is one thing that you really miss, like, once you retire. You know, everybody talks about the camaraderie, the players, the dress room, the road trips, like all of those things are really something you miss as a player. So to get back involved in a team with the possibility, even though you play a small role in pro scouting, it still is cool. You feel a part of the team. I mean, Blakey and the management team, Luke Robitaille, I mean, those guys are such awesome guys to work for. Because they get it, you know, they played the game at a high level. And what I like about being part of the Kings is that none of those guys, like we're all born with egos, right? Like you wouldn't be a pro athlete if you did not have some self-confidence or an ego in there somehow. But yet everybody there is so even keeled. And you're talking about Hall of Fame players and mm-hmm. cup winners, right? And yet everybody's treated equal. They listen. You know, we're built on trying to do the same thing Leafs are trying to do. So it's kind of funny that I'm here and my mom, you know, she calls me almost after every Leaf game. And she's a Ukrainian woman. She goes, "Hey, Mark, so did you see the Maple Leaf last night?" And she would come up with these, you know, euphemisms or whatever yeah. and say some funny things. And she would say, "Well, the Hurricanes came into town and they blew the Maple Leafs away." You know, she would say something funny like that, or "Temp, or the Leafs were hit with lightning last night." And I go, Mom, I get it. You go, "You know, I work with another team. I do have a care for the Maple Leafs, but I've got my own team to worry about." Oh, she goes, "Oh, Mark, please don't say that. They were so good to you." You know, which they were, but it's interesting being a former player in this city, and because there's some of us that had played for the Maple Leafs. Mike Eastwood works for Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Alan McCauley works for Philadelphia. Jay McClement works for Pittsburgh. So there's guys in the game that, you know, did their best to win a cup for the Maple Leafs, but work for other organizations. I skate with Gary Roberts on Monday mornings, and he does development for his friend Ronnie Francis with the Kraken, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at guys that played the game, you always kind of remember them as Maple Leafs, right? But mm-hmm. we're all now, well, a good part of us are working for different organizations and for others, like my friends, like, my phone blows up almost every night regarding the Leafs. And I say, "Guys, you know, I do care, but I do work for somebody else. And I've got 9 other teams to worry about besides the Maple Leafs." But no, it is fun to be a part of the job and being a pro scout. I mean, our job is specifically for trades and free agency. So, right. You know, guys that we have acquired through trades like Kevin Fiala or Victor Arvidsson or, you know, Gavrikov, those are part of trades. Pierre-Luc Dubois. On the UFA side, that would be us looking and, you know, rating and saying, okay, UFA centers, where does Phil Deneau place on our priority list? And obviously we signed Phil and he's been a great addition to our team, but that's where our job comes in for management is they say, okay, order all the UFA centers because we're looking for a centerman this year. And there's a lot of variables with money and all that come into play, but they've really do trust our judgment and our value and, you know, what we push for players that we think would make good fits for our team. And know what, you know, every other team is the same way. They do the same thing. Maple Leaf scouts are doing the same thing. When Brad Tree Living looked at trade deadline, said, "What kind of players do we need to add to this team?" They went out and got Edmondson, right? They added a little bit of jam and bite on their back end. They went out and got Ryan Reeves in the summertime because I think they recognize that an ingredient that this team does need when you play heavy teams like Boston or Florida. So there you go. There's where your pro staff come into play.
Well, that's definitely, like, you obviously know that trade deadline is like, and the free agent frenzy, those are like special holidays here, right? So it's obviously a really important job that you do. And it also sounds to me like your mom is like the original ladies talking Leafs. Yeah. So,
she is. Oh, she goes, and she'll say, oh, Austin, I see Austin's getting closer. So you think of a Ukrainian immigrant woman who came to Canada in the 50s, had no clue about hockey. Mm-hmm. And then, what turned it around for her is, well, she married in the early, well, she married in 1960. If you're a Canadian man, I mean, you know, with all due respect to girls, but it's like you're into hockey on a Saturday night. You know, my mom was upset at my dad because it was hockey night in Canada on a Saturday night. But then Team Canada rolled around in 72. My grandparents got into that because they were part of the Iron Curtain. Ukraine was part of Russia. So they got into hockey. My mom got into hockey. I started playing hockey. And then, you know, instantaneously, you know, how can you as a mom or dad not get behind your son? And mm-hmm. so, yeah, I mean, I got drafted by Detroit. I played with the Rangers, but when I got traded here to Toronto, I mean, that was like the epiphany for my mom, you know, because again, it takes you back to your childhood, right? Riding the subway, going down to Maple Leaf Gardens and watching those guys as a starstruck kid, right? Watching Lanny and Bory and Daryl and, you know, Davey Keon and Pommettier. And then all of a sudden you're one of those guys and you're playing against those guys. And now you become a Maple Leaf and you put that jersey. I tell you, like I had played 6 or 7 years in the NHL before I got traded to the Leafs. And I remember my first game because I played in New York the night before. I got a call from Phil Esposito that next morning telling me I'd been traded to the Maple Leafs. And I had to get on a plane and play that night in another uniform within 24 hours. And it happened to be the Maple Leaf one. And in doing so, I was nervous. I was nervous. Like it was like in front of my hometown. But it was a dream come true.
Well, Mark, this has been incredible. We thank you so much for coming on with us and giving your time. I don't know what else to say. We could talk with you for a lot longer. So
No, we certainly can. I love talking hockey and I love the fact that, you know, how women's hockey has exploded, girls' hockey. I mean, my girls, I said, hey, would you like to play hockey? And I don't know if they were shy or, you know, one was more academic and in the books. My youngest one was more of an athlete, but you know, she never did. But yet it's great to see the girls, the game grow with women's hockey and now to see that, you know, it carries on into the media circles. I mean, you know, women covered hockey back when I played, but it's taken on a whole nother level and it's, just cool to be a part of this with you girls.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks, we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
My pleasure.
Have a great day.
Yeah. Thanks, girls.
Thanks again to Mark Osborne for taking the time to come on the show and being a part of our 100th episode. It was amazing to have him on and just to do with, as a player, the perspective that he gives, being in the room. And then also, obviously, all those brought back a lot of fan moments for both of us, I know, from those 93-94 runs. So it was fantastic to have him on and we thank him so much.
Yeah, and he's just got this really incredible perspective because like we said, he's got the media side, player side, which is really important and incredible to get, and also his perspective now as a scout. That was actually really, really interesting, and he covers the teams in our Atlantic Division. So hopefully we'll be able to talk to him again in the future sometime. He is the first former player we've had on, so we are super grateful that he was able to join us.
Yeah, so hopefully other former players will watch and they'll want to come on to join Ladies Talking Leafs too. Yeah.
All right.
So before we go, we want to thank you, our listeners and followers on YouTube and social media, for listening and watching our show. It's our fifth season and now 100 episodes. So we can't really believe that we've gone this far already. And of course, we wouldn't have been able to do it without all of you who listen to us and follow us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been a great ride. And, thankfully, Sil thought of this show way back in to get me into this, and but like you said, it's listeners that and the followers on social media that keep us going. So thank you so much.
Well, we love talking Leafs, and we love keeping the conversation going with Leafs Nation. So
yeah. And don't forget, Leafs Nation, we are going weekly for the playoffs. So the best way not to miss an episode is to hit that follow button wherever you listen to us, Apple, Spotify, YouTube, hit that subscribe button. At the same time, please consider leaving us a rating or a review. It's so easy on Apple or Spotify, and it's important for our show to get recognized as a source for Leafs content. And we thank you for taking the time.
And another way to help us out is by visiting our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com. You can follow us there. And if you choose to, you can support us by buying us a coffee. Any donation goes towards helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. You can find the link to our Ko-fi page on our show notes or in any of our social media profile pages.
And as always, we want to thank our healthcare workers and our first responders for everything that they do.
We thank you, as always, for listening and watching Ladies Talkin' Leafs, presented by Bet Online. See you in the playoffs, folks. Go, go Leafs, go.
Go!
Do you believe? Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.